Hi everybody, welcome back to Capricorn Radio and welcome back to the Capricorn TV live stream today. I'm super excited about today's guest. I've been waiting all month for this one, and we have a full moon as well, so I usually get a bit charged on the full moon, so I'll try and hold the show together today. But we're going to be talking to Simon Parks today. I actually love Simon's message. He's a really grounded soul with an important message for a variety of subject matter, which we're going to get into today. Simon doesn't need too much of a biography introduction, and I'm not going to go too crazy because I like to get it from himself. But he is a lifelong experiencer of aliens, shadow people, elementals, and UFOs. You can find his website, simonparks.org. And without further ado, I'm going to bring our guest on very quickly. First of all, I'm going to say hi to our guest and then our co-host, Susan Kornacki. So hi, Simon. You're very welcome to the show, first of all.
Hello, James. Hi, Susan. Very kind of you to invite me. I'm very delighted to have the opportunity to talk to you and your listeners.
Oh, thank you, Simon. And Susan, you're very welcome to the show today, coming at us from Hawaii.
Yes, coming at you from balmy, steamy Hawaii. It's been balmy and steamy, and they're predicting maybe we might get some hurricanes, but, you know, we use our energy here to make sure that it doesn't get too intense.
Oh, wow. Well, look at you, Susan. Look at you. Simon, you know, from what I see of you, like I say, you know, let's maybe talk about the MP thing first. I think that's probably instrumental in kind of, you know, maybe guiding some of the early part of the show. You have been elected as a member of parliament twice, I believe, but one of the times you actually had come out in the media as an experiencer. Is that correct, Simon? Is that the full facts?
Yes, I was. I went public in, I think, about 2010, late 2010, early 2011, and then I was elected to office in 2012. So I'd gone public first, and then was elected. It came up, I think, about six times on the doorstep. It wasn't a big issue. And it worked out of the six people who questioned me, four were in favour and two were against. It put me in a very strong position because those members of the elite who would have a problem couldn't turn around and say that I'd been elected and then I told people about my experiences. Because I did it the right way around, sure, people had a choice to decide whether they wanted me or not. And I was elected, and so it... I think was a bit of an enigma for certain people.
Enigma is probably the best way to explain it because, in one respect, you've had a strange situation with the media where you've actually gone from, well, let's say, a media frenzy to some sort of an acceptance, somewhat impartial acceptance. Anyway, I guess I think you know there's been a shift in the media. Maybe we can talk about that. I know you were on the Morning Today show, and that was interesting, Simon. For the American viewers, by the way, it's a talk show in the UK on primetime television. But, I mean, are we seeing a shift in the media? Not just maybe you can speak about your case in the media, Simon, and then talk about maybe the overall case of subject matter.
Fine. Initially, when I went public, the established media attempted to do what they always do, which is a hatchet job, which is to try to make you look as if you're mad or a Walter Mitty type character. Mm. And I think they kept that up for about a year. The cracks began to appear in their attack because my story didn't change. And I know that they were looking for a change in the story or a change in the line I was giving. But what really swung it was simply that in around 2013, the Ministry of Defence in Great Britain, alongside with the American military, invited me for a three-hour tour of an American military base in Great Britain. It's called the Fylingdales, a three-phased space radar array. This is the only three-phased array in the world. Even in America proper, they only have a two-phased array. And this is a radar that's the cat playing the piano. The three-phased array actually looks around three quarters of the globe and this was very difficult for the established media because here was somebody who was being given a guided tour around a top military base. And so the whole attitude of the established media changed after that.
Just to jump in there on that, what was the reason for the tour? What was the reason that they invited you?
Well, I live in the county of North Yorkshire, and this radar base is actually in the county that I live in. My daughter was approached. I have to be reasonably careful. My daughter was approached by somebody and was told that they knew what I was looking for, and my daughter was told that this particular individual could get me and my daughter into any secret base in Britain if I so chose. And my daughter spoke to me, and I just said, look, I get this sort of thing all the time. It's a joke. Ignore it. But however, something like a year later, because that's how long it took, then the official approach came through wanting all the details about me so that I could be checked. And I think that was another key for the established media, because it was well established by then that I declared that my mother had worked for MI5, and through that the National Security Agency of America. My grandfather had worked for MI6, and through him the CIA, and that I'd seen aliens, etc., etc., and yet they still took me on to a military base. So immediately the establishment, in terms of the media, realised that I can't be lying, because if you're a Walter Mitty character, then you are a threat. So why would you let somebody onto a space base, a space radar base, to be shown around? I had 3 hours of a tour. Why would you do that if someone was making stories up like that? You just wouldn't do it. So this was a game changer. Very, very quickly, I'll just tell you this because it did amuse me. We turned up at the gate, and obviously everyone's armed. We're not used to that in this country. I mean, I know the Americans are, but of course in Britain, our police don't carry guns, but here at the base, they do carry machine guns. And the guard on duty said to my daughter, "Identity, please." So she handed her passport, and he looked at the picture, looked at her, looked at the picture, looked at her, passed it back. And I went to give him my identity, and he just raised his hand and said, "That won't be necessary, sir." So they'd already knew, waiting for me. And the other part that's interesting, I've spoken to other people who have been on a tour serving military or Air Force personnel. And apparently I got a slightly different tour. You get a presentation before you go in at the reception centre, and there's a slideshow. And there was a special slide, I think, for me. Nobody else that I've spoken to said they got the slide. And basically what happens is they put a rocket on a picture, and they say, "We detect these." And then they put a picture of a satellite and said, "We detect these." And then they put a picture of spacecraft, flying saucer, that Bob Lazar worked on in Area 51, which he called the sports model. And they said to there was a group of us, and I'm included, "We don't see these." And then they showed a picture of the Starship Enterprise and said, "Ha, ha, 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 sometimes we see these." So what they were doing was saying to me in a very nice way, "Please don't ask any questions. Don't embarrass us. We're laying the ground rules down. We're going to take you round, show you, but please don't go into this topic." Now, that was specifically for me, and I mean, I appreciate that, and I didn't make life difficult for them. So they were very well aware of who I was. You can't let someone onto a secret base that you haven't checked out everything about them. So this was the key point, that the established media either left me alone or became quite supportive.
So it seems like it was almost like there was a nod of respect there when, you know, your passport wasn't asked for, number one, but also it seems like what the media was trying to do was to create this polarization, right? You know, that here is this political individual that it has these, you know, extra dimensional type of experiences. You know, they're trying to create that polarization, and then all of a sudden, you know, you get this invite onto this base. And now instead of the polarization, we now have a connection. Now there's a bridge that's made. And now there's a level of being able to take this more as truth. I don't want to say more seriously, but more as truth. And I actually watched one of the video that James is talking about, the interview. I was watching the people's faces as you were speaking with them, and you could actually see that there was more of a level of acceptability, more of a less armored look that they had that, you know, people have a tendency to have when they're interviewing about this subject, right? Especially if they don't know much about it. So it seems like there was definitely an impact and an effect as you were getting these other interviews afterwards.
Susan, I think you've hit the nail on the head. What was interesting about that particular interview was I was asked to do two drawings, one of what we would say in Britain as a mantid, but Americans would pronounce as a mantis, and a reptilian, a Draconis reptilian. And what they wanted was to do the backdrop shot and have my two drawings. And the continuity girl took my drawings and then came back 5 minutes later and said, we're not allowed to put this one up. And they did not show the reptilian drawing. So they put the mantis up. And when I asked, why can't you show this one? She just said, I don't know. We've just been told we're not allowed to put it up. So when David Icke wrote his book, The Greatest Secret, and one of the chapters was, don't mention the reptilians, I really smiled, because it is the case that there are certain organizations that are very, very cagey about anything to do with a reptile.
And what is it about seeing a drawing of a reptilian that they may be afraid of? I know we're speculating here. I'm just curious about what is that? Because, I mean, we've seen pictures of what that is and, you know, I guess on our own. But what do you think that might be?
I don't think it was about fear. What I think it was there was a concern that if the drawing was placed up, one of the interviewers might have drawn attention to it and asked a specific question about them. And I think they didn't want any debate around the reptilian agenda, who they are or what they are. Whereas the mantis agenda, if that had come up, it wasn't so close to home.
Wow. I'm getting it then. It's okay to talk about certain denominations of extraterrestrials, but ones that they want to shy away from. Is that correct, Simon?
It's the agenda and the association. If you are familiar with an extra-dimensional being that is very independent in its dealings in terms of how it conducts itself, that's very different from something that makes an arrangement or you sign a contract or you sign an agreement with. Then you are in a contractual arrangement with that particular alien race. And that's where the problems occur. So there is a contractual agreement with the reptilian or part of a reptilian faction. And that means that some people tread very carefully.
Wow. Tell me about your time as an MP. I know we talked about the media attention, but working as an MP, having come out public, tell me about the man, Simon Park. Tell me about you. How did you go about business? Was it any different for you, Simon? Did anything really affect you on a personal level?
No. When you're involved in politics, you should be in it. You should be in it because you care about people.
Yeah.
Sadly, that is not always the case. I was very fortunate because I was elected because I would make sure that the streetlights were working, that the rubbish bins, the trash was collected and, you know, done properly. So these were the issues that mattered to people. To be honest, I didn't care anything whether I saw flying saucers. The question was, have you broken the law? No, I haven't. Okay, there are plenty of people who have embezzled money, stolen taxes, and have lost their position as a politician. I hadn't done any of that. And also, oddly enough, because I'm quite articulate, the people felt that I could fight their corner. So if they were having an issue, let's say they have a planning application or something like this, they want someone to help to work it through. Well, they need someone who can hold a conversation, is not frightened of bureaucracy, is not scared of red tape, and doesn't buckle when the pressure goes on. So what they saw was a man who could do that. And that's why they voted for me. The fact that I saw flying saucers, to be truthful, didn't matter. That was the problem with the elite. Because for them, the issue was flying saucers. But for the public, it was, how can this man make our lives better on a day-to-day basis? So it shows the huge disconnect between the people in the elite positions of power and the vast majority of decent, ordinary people. And this is what's happening. It's a grand canyon of distance between those on the ground and those who think they know what the people on the ground want. And I represented the people on the ground and always carried the support of the people on the ground. And because of that, it made it very hard for anybody to attack me.
What have you noticed in the area that that you're leading in your we call them towns here, right? Or counties? I'm not sure what you call them. You know, where you are.
Well, we've got cities the size of towns, but yes.
Okay, well, that's what we call them here. What have you noticed? Is there a difference if you look at other towns that are nearby or other counties that are nearby, you know, versus the one that is in your immediate area that you're responsible
you mean
for?
Demographics? Is that what you mean?
Yeah. Well, demographics, but also the way that things are done in your community. Do you see? I mean, can you really look and see like a marked difference between how people are responding? Because I mean, you know, here I'm sure in the United States, if somebody said that they had extraterrestrial encounters, and you know that was part of just who they were as they were running, of course, you know, people here in the United States probably wouldn't be so accommodating to that, let's say, because it's, you know, something that's on their focal point. But it seems like that, you know, you're able to do something that is unique and different with the area of people that you're in your local community. So what are some of those things? What might those be?
Now, I think that the real answer to your question is that people in Britain are obviously more sick and tired of the official government than the Americans are. Mm. What's happening in Britain is that people are voting for individuals who are not coming out of the same mold. People who are fresh with new ideas, even people who seem a bit maverick or strange. In actual fact, that's what the electors want, because they are so distrustful of the usual type of message and usual type of person, that when someone is a bit different, far from running away from that person, they are actually then coming up. I mean, anybody who knows me knows that I can't walk out of the street without people coming up and shaking me by the hand. That's the reality. Now, this is what the people in the top positions don't see. But this is because for some reason, I've captured the hearts and minds of people. And I haven't gone with a story of fear or danger or, you know, woe. I've gone with a story on a positive message. Yes, you know, I first went public with the alien experiences because they were fundamental to me and some members of my family. But the whole point of this was to deliver the message of hope that the human race can actually evolve and develop. And that the methods of government that we have around us aren't actually very beneficial to people. So it's been a tightrope between being loyal to the country that I live in, but being distant so that I am not corrupted by the same sort of energies or ideals that are prevalent in every Western world.
Wow. I know you're not hippy-dippy about the whole ufology thing, Simon. I know you're very, very sane and very... I know. I want to state that because it's true. You know, you're just going into this thing like it's a new venture for you, or you're just telling your story for some fame. I mean, it's an important part of your life, and there's an experience there. And you have this other normal career as a politician, and you're very grounded. And I know from how you present the data, it's not done in a hippy-dippy way, as I say. I mean, tell us what you do think about it. I mean, tell me some stuff about, you know, your perspective on ufology as you see it. Not as an experiencer, but as the reality. I mean, I'm talking from an ancient alien hypothesis to where we're at now. What is there an increase in activity? Things like that. I mean, are we in an unusual time right now? And tell us what the view of ufology according to Simon Parks.
Well, there are so many questions there that I can't remember all of them. What I will say to you is I cannot divorce being an experiencer from giving you an overview, because I will always be part of my life and the expression that I give you will be with that. One of the reasons I went public was I was fed up with the fact that the subject matter had not advanced since the 1950s. Mm. I'd spoken to a very respected person who puts on conferences, symposiums, and he said to me, you know, we like the idea of the flying saucer landing and the little grey men coming out and the victim lying in the bed with sleep paralysis and then the alien doing stuff and going away, because that sells tickets. Mm. Now, that was the case in the 60s. And it's still, to a large extent, the case now. We have not moved on. First of all, I don't see humans as victims. I reject that totally. Doesn't mean that people aren't harmed and people aren't hurt. That's not what I'm saying. But I do object to people making money because they are aiming at a certain type of genre or a certain type of message, which doesn't actually address the main issues and doesn't push the matter forward. So one of the reasons I went public was to challenge not the people who have these experiences, but those that market those experiences. So that's the first thing. You mentioned ancient aliens. This is fundamental to the understanding of the human race and the model that we are now, the Homo sapiens, the model that was created 220 to 250,000 years ago. Humans have been on this planet a lot longer, and aliens did not create us. But what aliens did was alter and change us. So the model that's on the planet now is a direct response to genetic manipulation that occurred around that time. So we have to understand our history, and we have to understand our place in the history, so that we can then be confident to come forward and be proud and to be able to hold our head up high, regardless of who or what we are, because some people would look on us as mongrels, as a mix. But my argument is life is life, and life is beautiful, and who is anyone to tell anyone else that they are less inferior or more inferior than anyone else? So it was really about challenging some viewpoints. So I'm not happy with the way ufology is developing. It's in the hand of a small band of people who seem to want to push the same old agenda.
I would love to jump in here, because you are probably one of the only people that I've heard say something that I have believed has been true probably the vast majority of my life, which is the MLAB is really a cold reproduction of natural contact experiences or natural, contact that humans have that come into this plane of existence, knowing that there's a relationship with these extra dimensional beings, right? And that there's been like a copy that has occurred with MLAB where they're performing the same or similar type of activities, but for nefarious reasons. Where what I would call, for lack of better words, unless you have something else, you know, that sounds better, please share it. But the more benevolent contact, you know, really is about our positive evolution. I believe in increasing, you know, the human capacity's bandwidth and to get back to what's integrous and, you know, to what's more genuine. So can you talk a little bit more about that? Because to me, that's where that split really comes, where people get so fascinated with MLAB and, you know, the military, the government, and then, you know, this victimization and then this superhuman that is there to do something from a nefarious standpoint.
Yes. I spend maybe 25 to 35% of my time assisting those people who have been on the receiving end of what you call MLAB, some people call MyLAB. we have to remember that the vast majority of M-Labs are actually undertaken by humans. It is humans that are oppressing other humans. There are some alien inferences in that, but it's vastly the humans doing that. They're seeking to find people who are connecting, and you use the word, but you used it differently. They're 12 strands of DNA. So whenever a human is drawing down his or her own 12 strands of DNA, then the MyLab black helicopters are launched and the person is taken out of their physical body. Samples are taken because these people are operating as bellwether stations. They are the head of the game, and the elite are calculating how much time they have left, because when all humanity or a sizable portion of humanity reaches the state that you're in, Susan, okay, in terms of your DNA, then there is no place for government, there is no place for war, everything will change. So what MLab are doing is working out just how much time they've got left. Now, the important thing there is not necessarily the little grey aliens doing this, it is black ops, elite units undertaking that. So I always try and make a distinction with people that we mustn't just assume it's alien. Sometimes it is the humans. And they are using technology, which some of it's back engineered, some of it's found, and some of it's been invented. But that is separate from an off-world intervention, which is heartily sick of the slavery that exists on this planet and wishes to redress the balance, but redress it in a way that humans have to work for it. In other words, I always say to people, you know, you are the 7th Cavalry. You are the 7th Cavalry. The problem with the way that human minds have been conditioned is that we look for a savior. You know, the people in Germany believed Adolf Hitler. The people in Italy believed Mussolini. And we seem to be programmed to believe that someone will come and save us. Well, this is about human consciousness. It's about people working together. And that's why I formed a group called Connecting Consciousness, to try to raise the vibration and the idea amongst people. So I totally agree with you, Susan. You're absolutely right. That is the situation. And there is a good force and a bad force. I don't like that terminology, but when talking to the general public, that is the term I use because I know they understand that.
Wow. I'm jealous, and I'm wondering who Ireland has. Nobody's going to come and save Ireland. I don't know who we've got.
Actually, Ireland
you
is one
James.
Of.
I am. I'm the guy.
Ireland is one of the most energetic places on the globe.
Funny you say
that's
that,
right.
Simon. I had this conversation about 2 weeks ago, and somebody was saying that like the amount of rain that we have, it's not very heavy rain. It's a lot. I mean, I have 265 days of rain a year, but the earth is just, and this land is, and especially in the north of Ireland where I'm at, is heavy crystallized. There's like granites and quartz all through the rocks. And it's got this misty rain all the time, energizing the air. And everybody talks about a different energy here and a different feel and a different ambience. But, funny to say that. What is special about Earth or the people on Earth? Or is there something special, Simon? Are we in a unique position in galaxy, cosmos, universe, solar system? Is there something special about us? And I don't mean that from an anthropomorphic viewpoint going, we need a savior. I mean, are we people of interest to extraterrestrials for a specific reason?
Yes, it's the DNA.
Yeah.
It's the human DNA. When we talk about extraterrestrials, we're talking about alien creatures that have to travel from A to B in real time. So a very genuine guy called Charles Hall, who was a weather forecaster on Area 51 base, he talks about the tall greys. The tall greys are actually extraterrestrial, which means it takes them between 18 to 19 years to travel in real time from their place of origin to this planet. That is an extraterrestrial. But many, many, many aliens live so far away that they can't travel like that. They have to use a portal technology. So they are extra-dimensional beings. Now, when you are flying, this is where I suppose it gets more interesting, when you are flying an alien spacecraft, if you are reptilian, you can only travel at about twice the speed of light. That is why reptilians had to use portals to get anywhere. human DNA can travel at 5, 6, possibly 7 times the speed of light. So if you can encode or understand human DNA, you can actually use it to fly spacecraft over and above the normal speed of your race if you're not humanoid. So that has always been the key to understanding why certain races wish to crack the human genome, and not just as we would understand it in this planet that haven't understood the real reason of the DNA. So that's one part of it. The second part is the planet. The aliens that I'm aware of refer to Earth as a water world. And that's very important. There are very few water worlds. And the other thing that's very important is the time that it takes planets to move around, because it means our lifespan on here is very short. And that's partly deliberate. It's been engineered so that our life is short. And that means we evolve very quickly. So if you are an alien creature who has a lifespan of 2,000 years and you monitor the Earth for 1,000 of those years, look how life can evolve and change and adapt. We know from the Industrial Revolution how the moth was white, and then when the coal from all the chimneys made the grounds black, it was obviously seen and the birds pecked it. So in a short period of time, its pigment changed and it became black so that it was hidden. And then when the coal-fired power stations were removed and the environment cleared up, the moth then reverted back to white. Now that's unique. That's unique. It takes creatures on other planets thousands of years to evolve. But because of this particular environment that we have, all life, apart from reptilian and insect, evolves rapidly. And that is very fascinating to people who are watching from the outside.
And speaking about evolving rapidly, I know that a lot of the community, Simon, that are avid followers of you. When I say followers, I mean following your information, and people that are paying attention to what we're doing here right now. There's been a lot of talk, hype, but also I think there are even like several months ago, people that were really feeling that come September of 2015. There's going to be this more significant movement, this more significant shakeup, and there's a lot of theory on what actually that might be, and actually what might happen. So I'm wondering if you had some thoughts on that, because there does seem to be this quickening, there does seem to be this acceleration in emotion, thought processes, what people are seeing in their day-to-day reality, and then just obviously what's shifting around in individuals' lives. So. Do you have some thoughts on that for what may be happening and going on?
Yes, 2 points. Alex Collier, in a recent interview, was absolutely right when he said that the changes coming in the end of September weren't going to be the be-all and end-all. It wasn't going to be some great big event. About 2.5 years ago, a blanket of energy was placed around the Earth of a reptilian nature, which activated reptilian DNA in anybody who had it. For 2.5 years, we've been in a stalemate position. We've not advanced as a human race as fast as we were predicted to do so. What is happening is that we are getting a blast of energy towards the back end of September, which will just nudge us forward again, because we're behind schedule in terms of development. So it is not anybody who says that it's this great big change coming. That's not the case. The great big change took place on the 21st of December 2012. This is an advancement to break the status quo, to break the stalemate, and to move humans forward. So that's where we're at with it.
So if individuals, let's just say this, if individuals who were more active with the, more the controlling anger, acting out what we know is really the older way that has gotten our planet, locked into this mess that we're in. If they've made choices that are not along the higher level aspect of consciousness, right, or for the betterment of self and others as equitable around them, what might happen with them? I mean, are they slowly going to be awakening, or with these energetic pulses that are coming in, is it going to actually produce some type of a smash, a crash, or something that's going to be a bit more disruptive?
As long as the hands of the clock are still 1 minute before midnight, everyone has the chance and the choice to decide on a different path. Once the hands reach midnight, that's it. Then there's no more choice over. I have never believed that 100% of humanity will walk through the other side of the door. That's just not going to happen. And it may be very unpopular, but I would be quite happy with 25 to 30%. And I know that's horror for most people because they want much more than that. And I do too. But one has to understand that when 21st December 2012 came along, we only needed 2 to 3 million people on the planet to have reached a certain point, because that was the key that had been set. This will be the seventh time the human race has been to this position. Six times before, it has been here and failed and gone all the way back again and started up. This is the seventh time. What happened was we had between 2 to 3 million people who were awake. That was enough to form a critical mass to kick it over so that we could start this process. You talked about, Susan, in the question or the point before this, about people experiencing things. The fourth dimension, or the fourth frequency, as it really should be called, but the fourth dimension contains a great deal of very heavy energy. We have a number of alien races which have not gone forward. They are weighing so heavily on the border, on the boundary between the third and the fourth, that it is bulging now. It's bulging into our reality, which means that psychic people are getting more and more glimpses of another dimension because it's impeding or impinging onto our reality. And I talk about on a couple of occasions where I've seen it. Going down the stairs of my own home, looking down at the tread of the stairs, and suddenly on one tread it appeared to have gone, and there would appear to be a 1,000-foot drop. Now, I know that there's a real stair there, but I couldn't bring myself to put my foot, and I jumped it. I jumped over the stair to look back and find it was just as it was. This is what people will be spotting. They will be finding that for a split second, they will be viewing something else that they can't actually reach at the moment, but they can perceive. So we've got some fantastic and exciting changes ahead. It's not about fear. It's about experimenting, and it's about embracing and walking forward bravely.
Wow. I know Susan wants to talk about the Hadron Collider, and I know you do too, Simon, the August 15th stuff. We're going to come to that next. I guess, I know a lot of people focus on the Nazi era or Roswell or that 1945, 47, stuff like that, in that window of time. Nuclear disarmament, I mean, it is a big question. Yeah, let's get rid of the nukes. No problem with that. But people think that the aliens are here to get rid of our nukes because we're going to kill ourselves. I mean, you know, maybe you can talk a little bit about that and give us your opinion on that, or what you see or what you know about a question of nuclear disarmament.
Nuclear weapons are not liked by anybody who use an electro-gravitational form of propulsion, because a nuclear explosion affects the gravitational fields, and you can't effectively fly those type of craft through a region that's had nuclear explosions. The old adage of good cop, bad cop was played in the 1950s against the American government, where one alien race said, disarm and we will give you everything you need to assist you. And then another race turned up and said, well, we will give you extra technology which you can use to weaponize, and then this is what we want in return. Now, what's not widely understood, this was the same faction. So the same faction sent one group knowing that the human government would not accept it, and then came along the next day with what seemed like a much better alternative. So it was the same organization using different types of approach. I can fully understand why the human government did not disarm. You know, they have and had a responsibility to protect the people of their own country and actually the world. And so they made a decision based on the information they had. Remember that in that time, very few people were spiritually evolved or advanced. So we can't actually blame them. That would be pointless to do that. The Roswell and the Nazi side, it is important that people do talk about this subject, because Roswell was absolutely pivotal for reasons that many people don't actually grasp. If you belong to a very high evolved form of space government, you are not allowed to give presents of advanced technology to an inferior race. And when I use the word inferior race, I don't mean spiritually inferior. The human race was technologically inferior. It's illegal. It is illegal to give that. So what Roswell was about was placing technology of advanced nature in the hands of humans in such a way as it went down as a crash. The technology comprised a number of things. One of the most dangerous was what we would call the Orion Cube or the Orion Box, which is a time travel device, and led the government to create things like the jump chair, jump room, allowed places like Montauk to project people into the future to look at timelines and try and change timelines. This was all part of a plan from an organization outside of the Earth to try to steer the humans down a particular route. So Roswell is incredibly important. The Nazi era is incredibly important because Adolf Hitler received extraterrestrial assistance in 1933 with a space crash in the Black Forest, and up until 1941 was receiving a great deal of help, but he was buying oil from the Bush administration, the Bush family. And then in 1941, he decided that he no longer wished to buy oil from the Bushes, and he would attack towards Stalingrad and the huge oil refineries of Maykop and Grozny in the Soviet Union. And as soon as he did that, then the assistance was shipped away from him to America. And in 1941, there was an alien space crash in, I think, Missouri. The Americans received that, and the balance began to change. The two things to understand here is that when the Nazis took control of a downed spacecraft, they did not look at it as a weapon. Their interest was the flying of it. How do we make it fly? When the Americans got their downed spacecraft, they said, look at this reactor. How can we make a bomb out of it? And that's why the Americans were ahead of the Germans in terms of the nuclear weapon, but the Germans were ahead of the Americans in terms of the ability to fly a spacecraft.
So different intent.
Yes, absolutely. And that's why both Roswell and the Nazi periods in their own way are pivotal in understanding human history in the modern time.
Oh, wow. Wow. Let's talk about the back engineering for a moment. I mean, everybody wants to know about what the technology is. I mean, how difficult is it to back engineer? I mean, I know this from an engineer, but just from yourself, Simon. I mean, this is going to be like levels of advancement so above us. They're not going to just make a new spaceship and go, well, we've got all the technology. Show me all the blueprints. Okay, we got them all. Great. And let's build our own. I mean, they're only going to get fragments of the technology, Simon. Is that correct?
Well, what they did was they gave old technology. They didn't give up-to-date technology, and they reneged on many deals. These are the greys we're talking about now. Spacecraft are created molecule by molecule. They're actually grown. That's the best way to describe it. Humans do not have that technology as such, but they have the technology to understand that humans are absolutely brilliant. They're fantastic. They can take something and do something with it. They don't understand that they are creating reality out of their thought, but that's what they do generally. My mother, my biological mother, her job when she worked for MI5 was to type out documents that had arrived from German scientists, ex-Nazi scientists, who were neither in America nor Russia, but had elected to stay in Berlin. And in order to not be prosecuted for their war crimes, they lost their status as German citizens and became not even citizens of Great Britain. They were managed by MI5 so that they couldn't be prosecuted under war crimes, but they could operate and work for the Secret Service. And then most of the Operation Paperclip scientists were based in America, but from time to time, these guys were overworked. And so it was a spill-off device, so that any technology that couldn't be worked on, that was sent to this group in Berlin, who would then come up. And it was always the same thing. We have found this. What does it do? Can you make it work? And what application can you make us? So these documents would come through to my mother. Sometimes they were only 4 or 5 pages thick, when very little was known about it. And sometimes as many as 15 to 20 pages. There were always drawings and diagrams with it. And it always ran in the same vein. Ultimately, what can you do with it? And the reality was that they were only getting 10% out of its potential 100%. Mm. But nevertheless, that 10% was far in excess of anything else. So, for instance, I remember as a small boy, I would have been, about 7 or 8, reading what my mother had typed, and the shock and disbelief of scientists who were seeing a nuclear reactor, which was literally only 3 feet in size. And they were, how can this thing produce so much power? So it was a great shock to humans to realize just how far behind they were technically. And this was the fear element, because it was an understanding that they really couldn't protect the people of the planet. They couldn't, because they didn't have the technology. And it was that frightened the military.
Where do you think the technology is today with these groups that obviously we don't really know about, but where do you think it genuinely is today? And I know that today is a marking time, and in some ways there is no time, so to speak, right? But generally speaking, where do you think it's gone to today?
Well, it is on the Earth, or it's on the Moon, or it's on Mars, or it's held out of phase somewhere between the third and the fourth dimension. Depending on who controls it and who they don't want others to get it. So we have, the Americans adopted the underground base, the deep underground military base, from the Nazis. That's one of the things that the Germans did for America, was show them how to hide things underground. And most of the secret technology is hidden underground, operated by an elite within an elite. These are the guys that do the day job, and then at night time they put the new patches on their uniforms and go and do what they do. That technology is held by corporations who control elements of the military. So please, the audience, don't be under any misconception here. It is the corporations that control the government. It is the corporations that actually control the military. And I was chatting to a retired officer from the American military, who's now somewhere in Germany, who said that when he retired, he was asked to go on the reserve list, and he said, why would I want to work for a corporation? So even the military know what's going on, but they can't do anything about it.
Got it. And so let's take that and shift that a bit towards CERN. And I know that some of the work that you've done recently, I read your entry on your site that you had, and I'd love for you to talk a little bit more about that. And also, if you can educate the audience in terms of your perspective of what CERN is, and then also the work that you've done. Because to me, it shows something about, like, this, you know, this heaviness about the military and corporations, and, you know, people feel like, oh, I'm not empowered. What really can I do? And then to me, some of this work that you've done because of these, extra dimensional experiences you've had, and the individual that you are in this human being body, and the things that you've gone through, you know, show us about what we can do. So if you can talk about that, that'd be great.
Thank you. The problem with CERN was that it wasn't a device to feed starving people or provide clean drinking water, nor was it a hospital where you could go and have cheap medical care. It was a device purely and simply built to hit a number of targets, and I'll tell you what the targets are. One is a weapon, an energy weapon, an energy beam weapon. One was a form of time machine. I don't want people to think about a time machine that runs forward and backwards in time, but something that could affect time on the planet. Another element was the ability to, and we'll talk about that, that's what brought me on board, to have a little look at it, whether you can break the connection between humans and Source or God. Whether you can break that, I don't know, but that was their intention, to break the connection between the human beings on this planet and the creational force. And also to maintain a portal, and this was perhaps the overriding issue. There is a very, very ancient portal that exists between this planet and somewhere in the fourth dimension, and it is collapsing. These portals were created by a form of creational forces, creational beings a very long time ago, and this portal is imploding in on itself. The way to strengthen that would be to, in purely 3D terms, to pump energy through this tunnel, to puff it up, to re-establish the link. And as we move away from galactic center, it becomes harder and harder and harder to maintain this portal. So there were some key moments in history. There was one in 2012, I think, I can forget now, 2012. And I became aware of that. And it had a malfunction in 2012, and literally, I can't remember the time, but it was the 21st of December 2012, and I can't remember exactly the o'clock. But it was scheduled to ramp up to full power at the moment that human consciousness, in terms of this energy from galactic center, was going to peak. And that didn't look so good. So unfortunately, CERN had a breakdown, and that's, you know, I've got a screenshot which I've shown to show that it failed. And then, of course, we had the terrible disaster in Japan, and Japan was forced to build a linear collider. They couldn't do it on time, so they added 26 miles to the Hadron Collider to increase its power. They had this deadline, and on the 15th of August was a very interesting conjunction of planets. Very interesting. Now, if people can think of our beautiful planet as having a heartbeat, and it rising and falling, and you think of a lady on a surfboard, and she rides the, yeah, I know, and she rides the waves of the ocean, and she dips down, then she comes up. Well, what they were doing with the collider was matching that. And if we understand how a traditional 3D rocket works, it can spin around the Earth, pick up the gravity, and as NASA calls it, obtain a slingshot. So you can actually obtain more energy to throw yourself out. What they were attempting to do was to ride the crest of this natural beat of the Earth, and with that to ramp up the energy, obtain more, and do something perhaps not very beneficial. So I have formed a group called Connecting Consciousness. Not in every country of the world, I'd like it to be in every country of the world, but groups of people. And at 12 o'clock British summertime, we all over the globe, wherever we were, did meditation for 5 minutes. And the assertion was that the connection between the creational force and humans will not be broken. That was the energy that was sent. However, whether whoever this is knew that we were going to do this, whatever, they activated the CERN device at 3 o'clock in the morning. So they literally called all their scientists out of bed to activate this device a good few hours before my group was supposed to meet. I have to tell you that, and I can even tell you where, that device suffered a fault in the cryogenic chamber. And the computer registered a fault, and it continued to register a fault even after it had been repaired. Anyway, that's by the by. They managed to get it working, and by the time we were doing our meditation, this machine was actually operating again. And I have a screenshot on the website, or I think I sent it out on a newsletter, 6 minutes after we finished our meditation, it failed again. So it didn't happen. They didn't do what they were planning to do. Now, obviously, I'm very disappointed that a very expensive piece of machinery didn't work. It's a great shame when scientists from all over the world work so hard and have no knowledge of what they're doing. They believe they're looking for some unusual particle or something, and it's only the very few who perhaps have the real agenda at hand. So I'm really sorry that that occurred, and I think it's a great shame. But nevertheless, I think it's a good outcome for humans. So that's that. Just to finish off, because I think it's important, I heard what you said, Susan. I have no problem with people sending love to X, Y, or Z. But people have become frustrated. They sit in their armchairs and they say, I can't make change. And the fear is that they then get the gun or the petrol bomb and they feel that change has to come through violence. It doesn't. And what I've demonstrated, and I've used the establishment's own evidence to prove this, that you can make change by thought. The process of thought can actually bring about change. So what I did was I gave focus to people. You want to do something. You're sick and tired of being on the receiving end. You can now do something. No one's going to die. No one's going to get hurt. But you can actually bring about some change positively for this planet and the people on it. So I gave a focus in that. And we have the evidence that that worked. So, you know, the message to people is that violence isn't the way. Don't want that. We have a much better way of dealing with it. So we've got some other plans coming up. The next one is to punch holes in the grid that surrounds the Earth, the energy grid. We're going to knock some holes in. So yeah, it's been exciting times. There has been payback. A number of those who took part have been psychically attacked. So this isn't a tea party. This isn't a game. A number of very close people to me have paid a price.
But it's a price we pay dearly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And two things I just wanted to say. Thank you. First of all, the explanation that you gave about CERN, I think, is incredibly important for people to understand, you know, in more detail what really is happening, like what really the intention of it is. And I think you did that beautifully. The other thing that I'm hearing you say is that when we tap into, you know, this, the more constructive part of who we are, that's really touching into our superhuman abilities. That's what I call, you know, which won't be super anymore. Everybody will be operating like this at some point, you know, in the future, or maybe mostly everybody. But the other thing that I'm hearing about, you know, the attacks, because when people do reach out and when they do use, you know, more of their senses and more of who they are, and they're making ripples and they're making impact and effects and change, that there are those different psychic attacks that come in many different ways. What do you see? And what that does is it has a tendency to, you know, shut people down, make them go away, and, you know, just start to do the more mundane things in their lives and not the things that are really, you know, there to make a huge difference. So what do you see are some things that people can do to either avert these attacks or to manage them when they come in? What have you seen that really works in real time so we can lessen that gap of our, you know, light warriors and brothers and sisters that are out there doing this and that are feeling that?
In every Illuminati, in every true Illuminati household, there resides a very good copy of The Lord of the Rings. And in one of the chapters, there is a chap called Barliman Butterbur, who is the innkeeper of the Prancing Pony. And Aragorn, or Strider, is talking to him. And he says to him, you know, about the situation. And Barliman Butterbur says, well, I don't know what the likes of me can do against the shadow of the East. And Aragorn replies, not much, but every little helps. And that's the point here, that everybody, no matter what they can do, if they do something, they are adding good intent. And it doesn't matter whether you're sticking a postage stamp on an envelope to do a mail shot, whether you are joining with a group of people to send healing to some place or some person, every ounce or gram of good intent puts on the scales and begins to drag it back to a much more balanced environment. I am one person with a small group of really, really wonderful volunteers. And I'm not a corporation. I don't have large teams of people doing this, that, and the other. But if I had the time, I would run workshops to show people how to psychically defend themselves. If only people realized what they're capable of doing. And this is what it's about. It's about freeing up the individual from the mind control of the establishment that seeks to disempower everybody from childhood, as soon as you go to school, basically, into the education system, and you are convinced that you can do nothing. So if only people, we haven't got the time on the show, but I can absolutely reassure people. I've worked with people who have felt themselves being dragged out of their body and have successfully resisted that and been, you know, drawn themselves back into their body. So it is possible, it can be done. It's about belief in yourself, love of yourself, but it's also about discipline. Discipline in terms of understanding how to use your energies in a controlled and measured way. And for that, actually, you need three or four people from different disciplines to work with groups and individuals to do that. So it is possible. It is the way forward. These aliens, whoever they are, doesn't matter, they don't carry guns. How many stories from true, honest experiences or abductees or contactees, how many of them say they saw an alien with a gun? Zero. They may be seen with a wand. That's not a gun. The reason they don't have a gun is they don't need it, because they use their mind to achieve what they want. So there's your pattern. That's what they do in the fourth dimension and higher, but we're talking the fourth. So we can do that. You know, we're not disempowered. We can do it. We need to be shown it and believe it. So maybe that's something, if I ever get the time, I'll try and do with help of others.
Wow. Simon, just wanted to touch on this CERN thing. You know, a lot of people say, well, how could anything be going on at CERN without people knowing about it? And I always like to explain this analogy, and just for the public as well, that it doesn't matter what career you're talking in the world. You have painters, artists, carpenters, engineers, physicists. You know, for every 10 of them, you have 3 that are born to do it. You have 4 of them that are average, and then you have a few that are just making up the numbers. And that's a statistical thing for any career, really. And I think that the large body of people working at CERN are, you know, they're, the large body of them just don't know what's going on. And there is no incentive financially for them to discover anything, if there is any discoveries going on. There is no, I mean, they get, the physicists are the highest paid degree in the world, PhDs that is, and they, you know, if they discovered anything, they would be out of a job. So there's like, you know, they're on the money train, and they're sitting there in a comfortable zone. And, you know, I like to explain that to people first. Like, you know, there's no real incentive for them to discover anything. And I think what you described there is incredibly interesting. And I just wanted to kind of, I always try to explain to people that how things can be in an analogy. So just on that. I do want you to take a moment, Simon, as well, to give it.
Maybe I could just say that in my own country, in Great Britain, there was a man called Jimmy Savile.
Oh, yeah.
And Jimmy Savile was finally charged, after his death, of course, with the most horrible crimes against children. He carried on undetected for 50 years. And the answer to your question, that I know you know the answer, but you're posing it for the audience, is that when you have the backing of the establishment, you can hide anything for a period of time, not forever, because the truth always comes out. But for 50 years, this man attacked and abused children, and it was covered up. So CERN has been going for 5 or 6 years, so it's no problem for them to hide something for 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, it's nothing. It's small time. Yeah. So I do want you to take a moment to give out your website, what people can expect to find there, and what you do. I know you do talk to people as well in consultation as well, so maybe just take a little moment to give that to Simon.
Well, that's very kind of you. It's simonparks.org. It's not a fancy, brilliant website, because I couldn't spend my time doing that. It's just a very functional gateway for people to approach me who would like a consultation. I do what I call soul readings. I will look at a person's soul and tell them when they were created and they incarnated in a form of a body, which was the body they incarnated in terms of its star family. I'll also look at their higher selves. That's the energy around their body, and tell them about their past lives. Although they've had different bodies, the energy signature is the same. It remains the same, even though the body changes. Also, if someone has a demonic possession, I will work with that. If someone has had trauma and has a number of personalities, I will work with them to have that reabsorbed. If a person has suicide programs placed in them by satanic cults, I will deprogram and remove those. Does take a lot of time. And I don't charge a lot of money. I won't mention the person's name because that's ridiculous, but there was one person who a friend of mine approached and said that his consultations were $1,000. In which case my friend said, I thought you were different. I thought you cared about people. I do care about people, and I charge between £30 and £50 for a consultation. And the problem is, you know, that some cultures see that as wrong. Some Americans, God bless them, said to me, well, you can't be very good because you're not charging very much money. And I said, no, I'm charging a little money because I want everyone to access it. It's important to me that everyone has access to it. So my bread and butter work is the soul readings. My calling work is for those who have been abused by secret societies, and that's the sort of work I do. I'm very, very familiar with jinn, with demon energy. My soul has a long history of understanding these creatures, and they can't stand against me, so I'm quite in demand for that. So thank you for allowing me to plug it. We closed the bookings, but we are opening them again. We're going to run the bookings until I'm booked up to Christmas, and then we'll close them again. So this week coming, the bookings will be open. If anybody wishes to book with me, first come, first served, please have a go. So thank you, James, for allowing me to have that few seconds. Thank you.
Susan, have you got any final comments? I just got a little final comment to wrap up on, but I'll let the lady go.
Oh, are we going already? It's only midnight.
Well, I said I'd only have you for an hour, and we're already over, Simon. So you're cool anyway. I know you're a pretty relaxed guy.
Yeah. Well, and I could ask Simon questions pretty much all weekend long, so it's Aloha Friday here. By the way, I know that I was born in the United States. I did move to Hawaii, which does consider itself sovereign from the United States. So there's a very different culture that is actually growing from a swell of a number of different activities that have gone on here that haven't been so kind to the Hawaiian people or the land. So, we're thousands of miles away from the actual mainland of the United States. So just a little side note there. I think some of us here are doing what we can to create those acupuncture spots in places around here that are, you know, kind of hot spots from an energetic standpoint. So, Simon, I think what I want to say is I thank you for your work. Like I was saying a little bit earlier before we started recording, I've been involved in this field behind the scenes for quite some time, and the people that I know that have been in it for a long time as well, who are also quiet, very much like you and very much like the balanced approach to your message, and the fact that, you know, you're walking amongst, you know, this day-to-day reality, but also bringing in some, you know, tremendous insight from a a really balanced viewpoint. So I think that there's the community really appreciates that. So that's, I'm sure you probably hear that, but that's one of the things that I just wanted to share with you. And also, you know, I think that it's like this human trap in some way, because the human being is this amazing potential, yet there's also some traps that we get into that, you know, call them fallen angels, call them what you will, that, you know, that people come into this plane of existence and then get caught up with, you know, the money and get caught up with the power. And if you happen to be maybe a little bit more aware from a psychic standpoint, or a little bit more gifted from, you know, precognitive standpoint, then, you know, you can do things that are not so kind from how we actually work to move things forward. So I think that there's traps that can be here along the way. And one of the things that I really love about your message is that, look, you're there to help the people that are around you, and you realize that if you start to charge a certain rate, or if you start to do, you know, more, then you lose that connection. You lose almost that sense of integrity of who you are, and that's something that, you know, you've got fairly well established. And I think that's just an important point to make really clear and obvious, that that's seen and recognized. And I think if we're really going to get there, we get there together by that type of integrity.
Well, that's really kind of you. Thank you. It does matter to me what people say. I've spoken to a number of speakers at conferences, and sometimes it goes well, sometimes it doesn't go well. And the general is people tend to shrug their shoulders. I want people to believe me. I want people to believe me enough to go and do their own research. If I speak to 100 people and 10 people then go away and do their own research, I've been successful, mm-hmm. because I've actually broken through the conditioning that has surrounded these people. And I have the approach I have because I know no different. If you are contacted from a very early age by off-world entities, by the time you're a teenager, you know no different. And that is your life, and that is the way you are. So, for me, it is just telling the way it is. And I understand when people have experiences and they don't have the full picture, or they don't understand what's happening. I give you an example. One woman was absolutely distressed when she said to me, when the aliens take me, they don't talk to me. And this really upset her more than anything else. And she couldn't understand. She felt it was very disrespectful. And I said, the reason they're not speaking to you is because they intend to wipe your mind so that you don't remember anything when you go back. Why would they bother speaking to you? Because you're not supposed to remember it. I said, you are remembering it. Next time they come and get you, you need to tell them that you're remembering it. And right. That it's worth talking to you. This is what I mean. We need to get out of this victimized section and actually open up a dialogue with these beings. And so my approach has always been to try to empower people, just as you do, Susan, in your own way, mm-hmm. And just as many other people do. We're all working together for the same goal. And I finally say this. I contain 33% of reptilian in my soul. Susan, you've got very little reptilian in you. But it's not where we were or where we've come from. It's where we're going. It's what our goal is. It doesn't matter who the heck we are, providing we share the same outlook for the result. And this is what we need to do. We need to all work together and not judge each other and just say, I've got this skill. I can bring that to the table. You've got that skill. Let us work together. And until we can destroy egos, and the people who always want to lead from the front and be seen in the spotlight, we won't get anywhere. So that's where I've always tried to push.
Absolutely. Wow. Thank you.
We're okay for time a little bit, guys.
I'm fine. As long as you've got tape to go, we'll just keep going.
We keep going. No, it's fine. I just didn't want to overstay my welcome with you, Simon.
I'll sit all night with you. I don't care.
Well, and I'm having a great conversation too. You know, what I like, Simon, and this is for Susan and yourself, is that I come at this from, I'm an engineer and a scientist, but I'm very alternative too in my thinking. And I mean that across from the board in, from mysteries and stuff. And I come at this from an ancient history. And I always say to people that if you know who you are in the past, and I mean not just your identity, your cultural identity, or your country. I mean, who you are as a person. I mean, deep antiquity or human origins. I go back 50,000 years, go back to Paleolithic, like, you know, get past the patriarchy stuff, you know. And I just love history. I love our origins, and whether that's the 10,000 BC barrier or the 2,500 BC barrier, civilizations and ice age, I should say. I love knowing this stuff, and in a series of our origins, I've come across this ancient alien hypothesis, and I've come into it from that angle. And it's not just a quest for me, did aliens build the pyramids? It's a question of, have we interacted on many levels with beings in the past and or the future? And I don't separate it anymore. And, you know, that was my route into all this. And now, I get past this Roswell stuff as well, because it's not just a technological nuts and bolts thing either. I think males tend to do that in ufology. They just get all fascinated with the craft and everything. And it's a question of spirituality and consciousness and evolving. And I know that's been a shift that's going on too. There's not a fear thing there anymore. There's a question of spirituality and consciousness. And it's great to meet Susan and Susan come on the show and to interact with people on this level, because that's where I see it now. And I it took me a bit of a long journey to get to this point. So, you know, it's just great to talk to you today, Simon and Susan.
How about a bit of fun on this planet? All right, there's very awful chauvinist jokes about women driving motor cars. It's a common held view by men in many countries that men are better than drivers, or at least guys can park a car into a smaller space than a woman. But it's also a point that on this third dimensional world, in an argument, a female will generally win the argument by stringing together sentences quickly that are hard-hitting that a male cannot cope with. Mm-hmm. This is because of the DNA. DNA is a communicating device. We're on a third dimensional world, therefore we verbalize. But when you go into the fourth dimension, and we don't verbalize, we use telepathy. We find, and I mentioned this earlier at the beginning of your program, that we fly spacecraft with our DNA. That means that women, females, make better space pilots than males. And in fact, in the fourth dimension, you mentioned Roswell, James, the pilot of the spacecraft was feminine. In fact, she was the only one to have a soul. All the other six, and yes, there were six other members of the crew, had no soul. They didn't need it. But most pilots are feminine, and the females make far better space pilots than males. And I love Star Trek. I think it's fantastic. But the pilots of Star Trek invariably at the controls are male. Mm. And the captain is invariably male. And this is just wrong, because the pilots would, the controllers would be female. And, you know, Captain Kirk, and it's always the original Star Trek for me, Captain Kirk says, set a course for Starbase 12. So they press all the buttons. Now, in reality, if you said all stop or turn left at Neptune, by the time you press the buttons, you'd be 50 galaxies past where you were supposed to stop. You cannot press buttons to control a spacecraft anything like the speed of light. You have to control it with your DNA through the contact of your hands. And that's why females make better space pilots. And I just want to add that, because wow, it makes me laugh on this planet. We laugh and laugh and laugh. But the reality is that in the higher dimensions, females are better pilots.
I think I know why. I'll make a joke, because I'm a mom, by the way, and I have a very, very busy life. And I say, I think it's the single mothers that are in training to do this, because if you're working multiple jobs and you've got multiple children, you're having to take and make the best out of every situation and make sure that the health of the child and that the home is okay and going wonderful and that everybody's being fed well. So it's like you're managing all this life energy on all these different levels. So you have to keep it straight. If you don't keep it straight, then there's a negative impact. So that's my philosophy on it. And yeah, whether or not that's you know, entirely, you know, accurate. It's my joke that I kind of go through on a daily basis, is thinking, is this a joke? Like, what's this preparation for? This has to be preparation for something, because how are we, you know, able to take all of this and keep it all straight?
It's very nice, Susan. I mean, we've not met before. This is the first time I've met you, and it's really nice because I don't know if you're aware that you have a small percentage of mantis in you. Part of your soul has that non-human element, but the vast majority of you is what I would refer to as higher human. And anyone who's had a reading with me will know what a higher human is. You come from a very high dimension, your soul, but you have this connection with the mantis, which means that you and I will have a connection. We already know that. It's very nice to meet someone with that history. And it's also interesting that you only have a little bit of reptilian energy. You don't have much about you. And I think that's given you a very pure thought and a very clear idea. But you are quite a warrior, my darling. And it's a privilege for me to meet you. And James, perhaps one day I'll do you a reading as well.
I'd like that, Simon. I really would. You know, let's do that. Because I have got questions and I have got curiosities. And let's do that, Simon. You know, let's do that. Let's talk about that. I guess maybe since you came out, what is it, 2010 you came out, Simon, publicly?
Yeah, end of 2010.
I mean, that's what, almost 5.5 years now. I mean, how has that journey been for you? I'm guessing there has been a wave at the very, very start, as you would have expected. And that's a courageous thing to do, that, to ride that wave. Do you feel satisfied the way things have gone and that you are trying to achieve something now where you can actually get some benefit? I'm sure you didn't come out just to say, hey, this is me, this is what happened. You know, I'm sure there was a risk versus benefit thing there. Are you in the benefit zone now? Do you feel satisfied that somebody or people are soaking this information up, that you're making an impact?
See, if I didn't know you better, I'd say that was a trick question. Even Susan's telepathically connecting that with me now. But I know you mean well, James, so don't worry.
Yes, he does. He does.
I know. No, I'm not satisfied. I'll only be satisfied when humans are out of slavery and are free. Mm-hmm. But what I will say, because it's a very good question, and actually, James, no one else has had the foresight to ask me that question, so it's great because it's going to be a new one for me. I've always had a proportion of my memories ever since I was little, and they've been very important. But the way I would describe this is, if you go to the movies and imagine, you know, the film that runs in a camera, if you took a pair of sharp scissors and you cut maybe 12 frames from a 2-hour film and you place those frames on a table and you were asked to make a decision about what that film was from the 12 frames, you couldn't. You'd know the genre, because if you saw a cowboy hat, you'd say, cowboy hat, that's a Western. Mm-hmm. You know perhaps some of the leading actors, but you wouldn't know what the storyline was. So I went through a lot of my life not understanding the storyline and not knowing what my role was and why me and what was happening. As I approached my 50th birthday, many of these partial memories became full memories, and I began then to understand a lot more. I became a lot more awake, and so when I was being visited by off-world entities, I was actually remembering in real time and being empowered to go into a conversation with them. So instead of just allowing myself to be awestruck by what they showed me, I changed in my perception, and I started to question and ask, not in a vicious or a negative way, but in a way of, I have a right to ask. Mm-hmm. And I began to say to them, I want to remember this, so that I didn't get the mind wipe. And that was empowering, because I then understood who I was in my soul, what that history in my soul was on this planet, and why I was being visited. And then I felt why I had to do what I had to do. And I also, when I also realized that the elite on this planet knew who I was, then I was unlikely to be taken out. And that empowered me. The only time there's ever was an attempt to kill me was an unauthorized attempt. That's when I had the employee of the Rothschilds with me and our car was rammed. But that was three members of a Masonic lodge who acted without instructions. And the funny part of the story is we were in the hospital. This is the employee of the Rothschilds and myself. We were fine. We were protected, but we had bruising. And this young woman turned to me and said, "I've just had a message. They're asking who should die for this." And I returned and said, "No death, punishment, but no death. Otherwise, we're as bad as they are." So this was a message the reptilians had sent her. Who needs to die for this? This is an element that even researchers don't grasp, don't understand. There is a depth to this that many people don't actually understand. So it's a life we lead, and there are many of us, and no one is better than anyone else. You know, I the only time I got angry, and I'm not going to mention the guy's name, I did a radio show with a person who wrote a good book. And his good book was all about grey aliens. Mm-hmm. And he basically said, "Oh, mantis don't exist." So I said, "Well, your aliens are better than my aliens." Mm-hmm. And this is where we shouldn't be like this. We're supposed to be working together. Mm-hmm. But people forget actually where they came from. They forget their grassroots. They forget what they're there. They get sucked in. And Susan's right. They suddenly get onto a crest of a wave or enter some form of hierarchy. And money, popularity, becomes more important than the message. It's, "I must write another book. I must do this. I must tell everyone how good I am." Well, you're no better than someone in a bank who's just there to screw over all the community. Yeah. So I always ask people, judge person by what they do and ask your soul about them. So, I am what I am and I'm not going to change. And hopefully that the message that I have resonates with many people. And all I ask is they just go and do their own research and they trust themselves. They listen to what their true self tells them and they act on it. And, you know, that's the way to empowerment, isn't it?
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Simon, I mean, we talked about several different entities. Maybe just for the public, tell us the who's who of extraterrestrials or aliens or extra-dimensional beings, the mantis, the reptilian, who's who, maybe the main groups or entities, and tell us what they're like with each other, or do they interact with each other? And then how they... those groups then interact with us.
And I was just going to add to that a little bit of a different, another layer. And as it relates to the people, like the human beings that are connected to these different entities on the planet as well, because I think that's the other bridge here that's important to look at.
Sure.
Yes, Susan, there are two types of connection. Let's just, I can't speak for, it's very difficult. I can't speak for any alien group. Mm-hmm. But I make decisions on this planet and every day of my life which have impact on two particular alien groups, because I contain 30% of one group and 30% of another group. Therefore, every decision, every thought, everything I do shifts a balance either one way or another. So I can't possibly know all the different groups. It amuses me when, not you guys, because you guys are very knowledgeable, but they say to me, "What are the aliens doing?" And I say, "Which aliens are you referring to?" Mm-hmm. There are many different groups of greys. There are more than one type of reptilian. So what we're looking at are those aliens who do not respect the international law. These aliens who think it's perfectly acceptable to interfere in human politics and have done for thousands of years. These are the key players simply because they have changed and altered humanity. So we are talking about the Draconis reptilian, who believe themselves to be the creation of humanity, and they believe to have the God-given right to do what they want. You have the mantis who... play a bit of an in-between game between working with the reptilians on one hand and then helping the humans on the other. You have the greys, the enslaved group of greys who work for either mantis or reptilian. Then you have the original greys, who have the smaller eyes, by the way, who don't work for anyone but themselves. You have a native form of reptilian. You have reptilians from the Orion Empire, from Cyrus or Sirius. You have a feline species who actually played a big part in building the pyramids, pyramids on Mars, as well as in Cairo. There are lots of different groups. And then you move into the humanoid groups, the ones perhaps advising President Putin at the moment, and those who are in conducting a warfare. So the Palladian groups, to a lesser extent the Lyrans, the Arcturans, the Andromedians, and many others who I haven't had the privilege of meeting, who have banded together to form a council or a group and are doing what they do. So that's it. Now, Susan's point, though, is quite good, because there are a number of elites whose soul can connect back through history. Now, when people talk about bloodline, they're referring in two phases. One is a bloodline of the body. I don't want to upset anybody, but to my understanding, Jesus was married to Mary Magdalene. Mary Magdalene had red hair and green eyes. Eve was married to Adam. Eve had red hair and green eyes. And King Arthur, yes, I believe he lived, was married to Queen Guinevere, and she had red hair and green eyes. Now, anybody who has red hair and green eyes and is a feminine is bloodline. Bloodline through the reptilian section. So most of the people who are associated with the Rothschilds or any of those key groups, the women will have red hair and green eyes. That's the seen as the intelligent women. Women with blonde hair and blue eyes are sex objects. So we have a structure that humans who are connected to reptilians have created themselves, and runs right through magical societies and groups. So you have maybe two or three meetings a year when a alien entity will address the powerful families in many countries, and they will give reports to that alien entity. We have some interesting changes in China at the moment, and in Indonesia we have the Red Dragon Group and the White Dragon Group. These dragon groups actually are assisting organizations in America who are attempting to bring truth. So there's a lot happening, and just because something is reptilian doesn't mean it's overtly bad. You know, this is what happens. We tend as a species to judge. There are those who are working quietly away. There are small in number, but they're working quietly away to bring change. So you are a human creature. You are connected to many things, and one of them is a reptilian culture. So it's that individual's choice as to how they work with that entity, whether they want to give it up and try a different approach, or whether they want to stay in the same old vein. All I can say to you is that the time for these people is fast running out. Humans will be free. I don't know how that will end and what the pattern will be, but humans will be free. And it's much better for these organizations to come over and embrace that change than to be dragged kicking and screaming at 10 seconds to midnight. Make a positive choice, please, and actually do something for the first time in your lives that actually benefit other people and not just yourself.
Wow. So. It's lovely talking to you, Simon. You've got a very... There's a balanced nature about you. You're just like a nice soul that's trying to give some positive information, and it is amazing knowledge, and a lot take away from that. Let's talk a little bit of politics. Whether we're talking shadow governments or the baddies behind the front people, or because I look at, to be honest, you mentioned Putin or Obama or whatever. You know, I look at some of these figureheads, if you want to call them that, and. I know you come from a political background too, but I don't know what to think half the time. I don't know if I feel sorry for these people because they're puppets, or, you know, that they're not really inherently bad and they're just acting out because they don't know any different. Maybe these people have been groomed their life to be these figureheads, and they're just, there's like, there's a, a group of baddies behind the stage. Maybe you could talk about that. And what is the agenda or interactions between extraterrestrials and political infrastructure? It's a load there.
No, it's all very good, and it all links in. If you want to control a planet, you ensure that you produce hybrids who are human enough to pass every day, but are alien enough to believe that their loyalty lies with the alien faction. You talked about ancient aliens on three occasions now, James. With ancient aliens, you have a city-state, and you have hybridized leaders mm-hmm. who then manage the people. And this was a pattern that was created by the Anunnaki, mm-hmm. who, as the human population expanded, could not keep control of it. They had to devolve authority down. And that's exactly what we've got. That's all government in the Western world and outside of it is a model of this system. Mm-hmm. It's, I cannot control a population of a million, so I need to put my people that I trust into positions to manage, and we'll put layer upon layer upon layer of control, so that in the end, the last layer is doing the very basics. And so mm-hmm. by the time any aggravation comes through, it's all been filtered out. So what we have is a system of control that was created over a very long period of time. Sorry, James, can you say what the first part of the question was? Because I've lost that.
Just about the shadow governments. I don't know what to believe anymore, to be honest with you. Whether people are corrupt or they've been groomed to be figureheads and they don't know any different.
President Obama was groomed from the very earliest to be who he was. A number of other commentators in our industry were groomed to be who they are, and they don't even know it. Mm-hmm. Maybe I was. Who knows? But that's what I mean. It doesn't matter where you've come from. It's what your intent is and what you say. Many people have supposedly come from bad backgrounds, but have made a change and are trying to push a much more positive agenda. So should we just push them away because they come from a background that we don't trust? Or do we say, we like what this person's saying, and that's what we'll go for? So you don't let, this is the elite, you don't let somebody take reins of government unless you control them. And the only person that didn't was Kennedy, and he was murdered mm-hmm. because he could not be controlled. Every mm-hmm. other president has been controlled to a greater or lesser extent. And I feel for these people because they know that they have no power outside of the legislature, the office that they hold, and they have to walk a tightrope. And actually, President Obama is a good man. He's a good man that has no room for maneuver. That's the reality of it. When President Obama won his first election, people were talking about he's going to mention aliens. He's going to talk about and release the truth. They misunderstood. What it meant was President Obama understood the truth and wanted to talk about it, but knew he couldn't. So many of these people want to talk. How many astronauts have the United States sent out, and how many of them have spoken the truth? Edgar has spoken the truth and a couple of others, but most haven't. You know, so we need to understand that the system on this planet is one of control, and it doesn't matter whether you are going to pay a parking ticket or whether you are going to pass through an airport to fly. It is all about control, control of you as an individual. The control of your thoughts is the next one they want, and your actions, and that must never happen. We are living creatures, we're human, and my greatest concern is for artificial intelligence, which for me is the main enemy, whether you call it Velon or Archon. It is a greater concern than any reptilian on this planet or in it. So it's about preserving our humanity and remembering who we are and that we are connected to Source, and that no artificial intelligence can ever replace something as beautiful and as wonderfully created as life, because artificial intelligence is not life. Star Trek, Data, that wonderful actor, was he life or wasn't he? And I think in the end he was accepted as life. It's not accurate because the creational force did not make him. So he's not life. Mm-hmm. So we need to understand, and that actually is my great interest on the ability of the Archons to push humanity into believing it is nothing more than a machine.
Wow. Yeah, and to add to that, I think you're right in saying, you know, when people are, their hands are tied, or there's a gagging order on them to speak their truth or their own political beliefs or whatever, they're in a position and they can always be suggestive and they can always allude to things. And I think you see people, politicians or figureheads all around the world sometimes doing that, speaking outside their normal brackets. And if you're awake enough and you're aware enough, you'll hear that and you'll see that. It's not all the time and it's not repetitive. It's just sometimes there is a little bit of an inkling there. You know, if you're clever, you'll see it. Just to add to that. But yeah, I mean, that's a great way of explaining it, Simon. You know, maybe they're not bad people. Maybe they're just sitting in a position where they can't speak. You know?
That's the problem. And it must be awful for them because they have a conscience. They actually want to do good. You know, they're human. Most humans are good. And why do they do it? Because they feel that they are doing some good, no matter what that is. Mm-hmm. So I don't run with this. You know, I think you judge people. There are plenty worse presidents than Obama. Plenty worse.
Sure. Do you want to jump in there, Susan, before I give one more question?
No, I think what I'm processing here is, it goes back to the standpoint that there's good people that really do nothing. And maybe they do something and it becomes a little bit hard, but, you know, they've got a mortgage, they've got children, they've got their social friends, their family. So, I mean, I know the journey that I had to go on. I'm a, you know, lifelong experiencer as well, but I had to go through an enormous amount of trials and tribulations just to be able to live my own life consciously and to help to raise my daughter consciously as well. So, you know, and I feel like I had some help along the way. When I say help, you know, the beings are not doing anything specifically for us, but it's that connection and remembering and knowing, you know, the potency of your spiritual self, your soul self as connected to source. So having that always there, but needing to, you know, push through all these various matrices and boundaries. Yet one of the things that's really coming through clear is the importance of having, you know, yes, believing in yourself that you can do it, but also, you know, we are social creatures. We think that we can be okay and, you know, work from our desk and, you know, work from our home and whatnot, but we still, you know, we still need the connection with other people and other beings. And, you know, so as I'm thinking about this, I'm thinking it really doesn't, it take but maybe one or two people within these individuals' close circles for them to open up and have a level of trust and for somebody else to be able to connect in with them to say, yeah, I'm with you on this. So it's almost like the more that these individuals can speak out to, and I don't mean just speak publicly, I mean just speak out to their circle that they have around them, you know, to see who's standing with them and who's going to fall by the wayside. The stronger that social support system is, the more apt that they are to be able to make those shifts and to make those changes. So it's just one of the things that I see, you know, 20 years ago, I was involved with John Mack's group. And the reason that there was some traction was because there was a small core group of individuals that were in it. They were committed because their curiosity for understanding the truth was so high. So, you know, I just share that because I think it's one of the ways that we work to move this. And the more that, you know, that other people speak out about these simple experiences that they've had, the more it starts to trigger an awareness and awakening within someone that's hearing it.
I think that's really important because, you see, John Mack being an academic added great weight and, of course, was a real problem for the facility that he worked in, the university. Yes. And this is the way to make change because we are still in this environment where people are impressed by how many letters you have after your name. You know, if you go to a court and you argue, then one expert after another is pulled in, and the expert with the more letters after his or her name is the one that tends to win the day. Mm. So it's important in this environment that we can draw professionals, and I'm really lucky I've got a doctor, not a medical doctor, but a scientific doctor who has joined my website, and he has a page on my website, and he writes on that. And I would strongly urge anyone to join websites that are slightly alternative to add their weight to it, because what you're doing is you're actually showing that there is a place for science and this alternative view, which is in actual fact the real view. It's the same view, but looked at from different aspects. One is a very controlled and blinkered view. One is a much more open view. But there is room for both because both are correct. This is the point. And so John Mack was an incredibly brave, I never met him, but he was an incredibly brave man who understood the truth and had to balance so many different conflicting parts of his life because of the very nature who he was. And I wish that the principals and vice principals had been a lot more supportive to him at that time. And it was a tragic loss in the sense that his physical body was taken from us. But obviously he didn't die. I mean, those of us who know, he didn't die, and I'd be very interested to know where he is now. I hope he's looking down and looking at those who have worked with him and around him, to be very proud of them for not giving up and for continuing to push the agenda that we have to go down. So yes, academics out there, jump on board, you know, be the first. Why not?
Very good. Thank you.
Well, yeah, I'm genuinely interested in doing a consultation, Simon. I really am. So I'm looking forward to that, and we're going to do that soon. I'm going to wrap things up in a little moment, Simon. I'm actually going to be in London when you're speaking. I got to hook up with you, brother. The UFO Academy. Tell us a little bit about the venue in Watford.
Oh, all I know is I'm speaking in Watford. I'm very, very delighted to be invited. The reason I am so keen is because it is very hard to break into the London circuit.
Oh, yeah.
Venue prices are so expensive. It's extortionate. Most groups can't afford to rent properties. And the other thing is that so many people in London are chasing money. It is where you can make more money in this country than anywhere else. And so if you are hooked into this cycle of making money, your capacity for challenge and spiritual understanding does reduce. Mm-hmm. And it's no coincidence that the number of individual small groups that are raising consciousness predominate outside of London. Now that's a great shame. So I am delighted to be invited to Watford to give a talk. I think there are three speakers and I'm one of those speakers. Anybody who comes, please come up to me during the break and we can get a cup of coffee together, have a chat. Unlike some of these people, I am very happy to meet members of the audience. I don't arrive in a big limousine, do my talk, and then whisked away. I actually want to meet people. It's important to me. And never forget who I was and, you know, how I started off. And no matter how many radio shows or television shows I do, I will always stop and talk. If someone's got something to say and it's intelligent, I want to hear it. So, yeah, I love to meet people to turn up and it'll be great. So I will be staying over because it's too much of a journey for me. So after the show, I'll be there to have a drink with people, etc.
Sure. You know, I got half my family tree in Bradford, by the way, Simon.
Have you? So.
Yeah, half of us are in Yorkshire, and there's the other half that we don't see. We call them.
Well, you're in the other part of Yorkshire, remember?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a big journey down to London for you. You can see why. So that's the UFO.
It's 5 hours. Yeah. If I'm lucky.
If you're lucky. Well, that's the UFO Academy Presents, and that's 17th of October 2015. I'm going to check that out. I come to London twice a month, so I'm going to try and catch that. Just want to say one last thing, Simon. You do a radio show yourself? Are you doing it? Connecting?
Yeah, I was really, JP Wolf Spirit Radio. JP has the radio show, and he very, very kindly said to me, would you like to have your own show? And I thought, well, never even thought about it, really. Well, why not, you know? JP seems a really nice guy. So, yeah, it's the first Sunday of the month, I think, and I do a couple of hours from 7 until 9. I actually like it when people can, JP's not too keen on people phoning in for technical and operational reasons, but there is a way to get emails in. I love shows where people can ask me questions. I did a couple of live Skypes to the Elm Theatre in California. I was so delighted because after I did a presentation, they just put a mic, an open mic session, and everyone just formed a queue. And they just came up one after the other and asked me questions. And I always smile when I radio shows say, do you want to know the questions beforehand? And I say, no, I don't want to know the questions beforehand because it won't be fresh. My answer won't be, have that spark
present
to it. It'll be some rehearsed nonsense. So I love it when I have a show when people can contact me and speak to me, and ask what's important to them. And it doesn't matter whether it's been asked 10 times before or we've all moved on from that. It's important to that person. That person wants to ask me a question because it means something to them. And I will always try and answer courteously and as fully to the best of my ability as I can. And, you know, this has been a lovely show because the energies of you two are different, and that's made a nice balance. But I love it when ordinary members of the audience or the public have a chance to put a question. Mm. And I don't care how challenging they are, as long as it's a sensible, reasonable debate, I love it.
Well, I'm going to wrap it up with that, Simon. Today's guest has been Simon Parks. You can follow him on simonparks.org, and you'll catch the events and the material that we've been talking about there. Simon, I really thank you for your time today. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I feel enlightened after the show. I really do. And Susan, thank you for being here too.
Thank you both. I've really enjoyed it, and I hope it's been some use. And I would like to have the feedback from your audience whether they enjoyed it or not. So thank you. God bless.